Blog Talk Radio.
Two things are true about students in urban American public schools. There are some students who do well and go on in life to become productive citizens, while there is a secondary population of students who go on to live lives that aren't so socially acceptable. While this secondary population of students, some 18% in Nashville-Davidson County, exhibit a number of behavioral issues and face extradition, it's no wonder why those students struggle to succeed academically. If they can't follow the simple rules of order, how are they expected to be focused enough to learn? I'm Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and I have recognized the needs of this population continually being unmet despite the best efforts of many dedicated educators over the years. As a result, my experience as a former special education teacher, youth counselor, and candidate for local and state offices, I've developed a school model to help address this troubled population. Dockery Christian Academy is a private, non-denominational Christian school whose primary focus is engaging parents as partners with educators and teachers in order to develop pro-social character for student learners. I'd love to share more information with you about this innovative education model. So please connect with me at www.dockeryacademy.org. That's D-O-C-K-E-R-Y, academy.org. Connect with us on Facebook at Dockery Christian Academy, or use the hashtag at 2020DCA. Thank you. I look forward to engaging you. Together we can make a difference for all of our children.
You're much more than the struggles that you go through. You're not defined by your pain, so let it go. You're not a victim.
As we have discussed previously here on Talk Straight, the time is out for just talking, and it's over with. What's needed is the information about engaging parents and their children in substantive learning. That's what we need today. Recognizing the fact that there are a lot of resources, and there are various groups around the nation. They all possess something, perhaps some piece, and a good piece of the puzzle. We now focus our attention, though, on identifying existing resources and making them available easily to be accessible to those who most need them. Otherwise, we revert back to just talking. So joining me tonight, I have two special guests in the house with us tonight, individuals that are serious, that convinced me that they're very serious about this this issue, this process here. You know, my focus has been on specifically urban American males that are at risk to a number of things. But join me tonight, our guest, Dr. Roma Benjamin, who is a retired principal out of the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area, and who's a pastor as well. And she'll get a chance to tell you a little bit more about herself. And we also have a regular voice that's been joining us in our discussion here, Ms. Benita Kirk. I found her to be a very enlightened, very serious, and most dedicated to the cause of bringing about this change. And grateful for her attention to Talk Straight and being here tonight. So we want to hear from her as well as we discuss our topic, methods and resources, reaching and teaching. Methods and resources, reaching and teaching. There are certain pedagogically sound methods to using the resources available for teaching young people in general. But you can't teach someone that you can't reach. So, again, join us tonight with our special guest, Dr. Roma Benjamin and Ms. Benita Kirk, as we get right into the discussion. But I've asked, and they're here with me, I've asked a good friend of mine, the late, great Donny Hathaway, to tell me what happens if people give up on young folk who have challenges. They give up on communities and families who can't seem to find their way. What happens? And just for a second, listen to what Donny told me. This is what he told me. He said this. Reverend Dr. Reuben Bachrie. We're on right now with, again, our special guest right out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, as well as Richmond, Virginia, Dr. Roma Benjamin and Ms. Benita Kirk. And we'll yield the floor to Ms. Benjamin first and allow her to come on and join us. And welcome, Dr. Benjamin, to our discussion tonight.
Well, it's good to be here, Dr. Dockery.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely, absolutely. Glad to have you. Very glad to have you. I know we had an opportunity to speak to each other last week, and I thought it was just going to be 5 minutes. I didn't want to let her go. I had to, but I didn't want to. Give it up. It was hard for me to do. It was hard for me to do. But, so, Doc, I know you pastor church there in the, as I understand, in the Harrisburg area, Pennsylvania, as well as you come with an understanding of education as a former principal and now working with a special reading program. Will you tell us a little bit about that, as much as you'd like to share with us?
No problem. Once again, I'm glad that you're having me on. And, yes, I enjoyed our conversation the other day and pray that we continue and that we work together to get done what needs to be done for our children as well as our parents. But, yes, I pastored a church for over 22 years, so I literally pastors now. So I cover them. I train and pour into pastors, bishops, apostles, whatever their title may be, so I don't have the traditional congregation, as well as I'm contracted with a private boys' school, and they're considered at risk.
Okay.
And it's a Christian school. Dr. Doctory. It's a Christian school, non-denominational. They are considered at risk. And, of course, you know, the at risk is, they determine at risk to mean at risk to fail. And so the classrooms are very small. And so today was the first day for students to return, actually, to the classroom environment. And it was unreal, sir. Unreal. At the things that I saw and experienced on just today alone. So I already know what the year is going to look like of, and my assignment of what I need to do.
Okay. Wow. Great work. Well, thank you again. Let's. I see we have a call at 6168. I think that's Jacksonville, Florida. Is that you, Florida? Okay. Okay, we'll come back to 973 then. Ms. Trick, thank you for joining us again. And you and I talked on numerous occasions, and I hear your passion for focusing on a prerequisite skill to being able to have mastery across the curriculum, and that's reading. You know, we've talked about this. You first learn to read, and then you read so that you can learn other things. So tell us a little bit about, I know you have a piece, and I know you're working on it, but I want, if you don't mind, share that with the listeners, your concept of one
Well, sure. Thank you for having me on. And I just consider myself a concerned citizen that understands, you know, the importance of reading. And in my research, I knew that the stats were dismal, but I had no idea how bad the situation was really for our children. And so I'm working on a project that I'm calling Reading While Black, and the tagline is Genocide in the Classroom. Literally, what's happening is in a literary culture, and especially we're moving into high tech, reading and the ability to write is like oxygen. It's not an elective. It's not, oh, it'd be great if you could do that. I mean, it is necessary to be able to survive and participate in the system. And I am just appalled that this is the only system that can get paid to and not have to produce any results and have 100,000. I mean, if I spend $20 right now, you know, say Walmart, this is a defective product. It does not work. I want my money back. And they'll say, of course, we're going to give you your money back. But we literally are being gaslit. We're being gaslit. The gaslighting is unreal, that there are 1,000 reasons why our children cannot obtain the skill after you have so-called certified teacher, reading specialist, reading intervention, best practices, and trillions of dollars being thrown at this and nothing, thrown against the wall and nothing is sticking. And so I think about Henry Ford. I think he was the first one that invented the automobile, if I have my history right. But when he was in there talking about designing the motor, my understanding in the story was that we can't do it. We can't go back. There was no such thing as it cannot be done. And we have been sold a bill of goods. We've got the 30 million word gap. We've got illiterate parents. We've got they're poor. We've got they like hip-hop. We got urban culture. We got 1,000 reasons why specialists and professionals do not have to produce results. And so I am totally – and parents are accepting that because they are being told that it's their fault. Now, end with this. We come from a culture when we were the most literary culture moving out of the industrial age where we educated children that had illiterate parents that could not read, write, nothing. They couldn't probably hold a pencil right. And we were able to do this in a one-room setup with kids on all different levels. There was no first grade, second grade, third grade. Everybody was in one room, and now we can't get nothing done, and I'm trying to figure out why is this acceptable, and I'm just very upset about it and want to see what I can do to be an advocate to help parents become educated and stop accepting that these schools cannot educate your children. So that's where I'm at with it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. Now, if you don't mind, I know you previously shared with us some of the work you've done working in the criminal courts office or the clerk's office. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes. I work for the DA's office, and I helped pilot a program that was called Early Intervention Program in the elementary school portion of the school system. And the philosophy was that if we can somehow intervene with children that are exhibiting delinquent behavior in elementary school, that somehow we can stop them from getting involved in the juvenile justice system.
Gotcha.
And one of the things that I quickly found out was that I had a little, I'll give this particular story that's dear to my heart. He was a kid. He was Miss Kirk. He was a smart kid. He was a leader, but he knew that he needed some work with his math. And he said, you know, Miss Kirk, I want to do better. And so I said, well, hey, we're going to get you some tutoring. We're going to get you some help. So I go to the curriculum coordinator, who looks at his test scores. He is below level, but he's not low enough to qualify for tutoring. This is what's happening in Title I schools that are getting funding, but you have to be low to get the funding. That's the only people that get the extra help are the people that are low. And you have to be low enough to qualify to get the tutoring. And I was like, okay, so here I have a motivated student that wants to do better,
right.
That cannot get assistance because he's not low enough. And I thought, there's something seriously wrong with what's going on in our school system. So that's
where
I'm at with.
That was a policy-based issue or some programmatic determination that you have to literally come in with one eye and an arm broken off and a leg off. I used to work in the public school setting, so I can appreciate fully what you're saying. And there are dedicated teachers whose hands are just tied by that process, you know. And it begs the question, what can we do? That's kind of what we're talking about tonight, methods and resources, reaching and teaching, right? But, so we know what the problem is. I think, Doc, we got a good grasp of what the problem is, right? What we really want to do is break it down to me like I'm 3 years old, like I'm a parent that's 3 years old who really needs to understand what can I do today to participate in the salvation of my child. You see what I mean?
Right.
So let me pause for a minute to recognize 973-6168. Can you hear me, caller?
I can hear you. Good evening. Good evening. This is Dr. Yes.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I apologize. I cut you off.
My name is Dr. Therese Hillard from Passaic, New Jersey. Good to be on tonight.
Okay, good. Welcome. Don't want to overlook anyone. Feel free to join. I feel like I'm going to learn something tonight. I didn't get myself ready. I got my pencil out. I'm fine. I'm ready to go. Doc, feel free to jump in the conversation. Of course, we have our two notices, but we're happy to be on Talk Street. Let's get into.
I agree with Dr. Benjamin and the other young sister. Dr. Benjamin is my spiritual mother, but I've worked in education for a long time as well. I worked in high school for 14 years, and now I'm a professor at a college. But the system is designed to keep us sick and sad and stupid. And so the same thing with medicine, right? You know, big pharma is designed to keep us sick. As long as you're sick, doctors need you. If you get healed, then nobody, you're out of business. And so the same thing applies to education. The system has been created that the more you keep them stuck or remedial, then that's where the system gets a check. And so how you take it back is that we have to take ownership of our own household and our own children, because if you depend on the system, you will remain in the same state.
Amen. can I get an amen, somebody?
Amen.
Very well said. And I just want to emphasize a point here, and that is the focus tonight. Sometimes, ladies, what happens is we get lost in this battle over who you for and who you against. And
right.
And I've learned to take that out of the conversation. Right now, all I want to do is to be for our children. That's all. I ain't here to fight with nobody. I'm going to do what I can to save as many of my children as I can. Is anything wrong with that?
Absolutely not. And, you know, Doctor, it's really funny that you would say it like that. Because when I walked in the classroom today with 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade boys that are, in a building, in a school system that says they're at risk to fail, well, first of all, the language is incorrect. The language is incorrect. So we continue to perpetuate a language that is wrong, and we say that they are at risk to fail. So guess what happens? We are causing them to be at risk to fail. But I went in, and I said the same thing. I said, hey, I'm not here, you know, to find fault with you or to put you down. I just need to know how many of you know the grade level that you read on. And so they were looking at me like I said a bad word. And I said, no one ever told you. No one ever told you that. What's your level of reading? And so some kids look at me like, no, I don't even know. Now, I'm talking kids in the eighth grade. They're looking at me I don't even know what you're talking about. And so these are the things, like Bonita was just saying, these are the things that make you angry and make you really want to do something, because we're in a criminal system, and it's not the prison. It's actually the school system. And so it's criminal to continue to pass students through the grades and through the system and say we taught them. So when I said that to them today, I said, I'm going to sit down with each one of you personally, and I'm going to show you what the data says about you. And they just looked at me like, are you kidding, Dr. No, I'm going to show you what the data says about you. And then I'm going to sit with you for you to set a goal to change what the data says about you. Because most of the time, we don't have the correct information to make the changes that we need to make. Now, there's no need to blame anymore, because the blame game is over. We already know that know what the problem. We know the system is jacked up, it's twisted, it's messed up. The policies, the regulations. We have to get people in positions to change. Like, I want to be in government because I want to change the policies. I want to change the policies that we've been doing for 100,000 years that make no sense, especially for our black children, as we say contemporarily, our brown and black children, African-American, and especially boys that continue to either be killed or go in the prison system to be killed. So my goal is, like you, Doc, to look at what can I possibly do in my immediate environment, and then like Bonita, to literally look at what can I do to extend it to the community and to the churches, to whatever. We have daycares and preschools, and we're all still doing the same thing. We are failing the kids and getting the money.
Absolutely. And, you know, my last read, public education industry spends in excess over $300 billion annually. And you have to ask yourself, what demographics have for all of that money that's spent? You understand what I'm saying? A lot of money. That's a lot of money. People are getting paid, as Bonita said. Somebody's going home with money in their pocket. But we cannot see the fruits of. Now, let me say that again. I realize that there are individuals who are on the battlefield, and they are tenured teachers who do the best they can, tremendous. And I don't want to give the impression that I don't know those people who are working hard every day. I work with some of them myself, and I like to consider myself to have been one of them in the public school setting. But they will tell you, perhaps in private settings, that their problem is that the system that they work for won't allow them to do really what it needs to reach children. I think about one of the charter schools that were founded. I think it was founded back in early 90s or so. It was out of Houston, Texas. These two Caucasian males went into a public school to do their student teaching training, and they observed the excellent, unmatchable instructional practice of this black woman who was just pouring her heart out to these babies. They turned around, ran, and got some other resources and what have you, and documented what they saw. And now they have one of the models that make a lot of money in the charter school, which is called KIPP. And
I've heard of KIPP. Yeah, I was just saying that, yeah.
Yeah, they acknowledge that where they got it from, but in their minds, they are the experts on how to deal with at-risk children, particularly black males, when in reality, what they did not get, though, Doc, was that this woman wasn't trying to win an award. She wasn't trying to put on any particular airs. She was just trying to educate those babies in Houston, Texas, against the socioeconomic odds they face every day in the urban area of Texas. And that's really what we need. Let me go this way. So I'm going to talk about a few sources. Now, when Ms. Kirk and I, Benita, spoke, she challenged me and she asked me about where are some places. Give me some names of some educational programs and structures and things that we can get. And I said to her that I'm careful not to reinvent the wheel and to get caught off in that spin cycle where everybody is saying the same thing and they're going nowhere really. So there are some good things that are out there, I believe, that we can pull together and we just start using what we got. And sometimes in psychology, this concept of unconscious competency, docs, we find ourselves unconsciously doing things that make the difference, but we're not focused on trying to document anything or do any research, but we're just doing what's natural for us in our heart, you know, and that tends to come out better than anything else. But what I want to do is I want to open the door. Doc, if you don't mind, Dr. Benjamin, if you would talk to me a little bit about the reading strategy, then, Benita, I want you to prepare yourself to share with me some of the things you were sharing with the audience, some of the things you found out, some strategies to engage parents in a respectful way. Now, even if the parent if you understand what I'm saying, you don't want to be disrespectful in your efforts to try to help them to help their children. So if you will, in a minute, let me get – other callers, feel free to jump in here with any ideas that you might have. And what I'll do after you guys get through doing that, I'll talk a little bit about two particular sources that I use in my research and that I've used in the development of Dockery Christian Academy, which is also a non-denominational-based Christian school focusing on at-risk males from grade 7 through 12. So in that order, let's do that. So, Dr. Benjamin, let me turn the floor over to you and let you kind of share with us a little bit about the reading program and some of the experiences that you know that work and that sort of thing.
Okay. One of the things that we really have to recognize is reading is not difficult to teach, but because we say it is difficult to teach, it has become difficult to teach. So the root of it is skills. And most of our children by the grade 3 do not have the skills to handle reading like you should. And because of the time that we live in, the algorithms of learning and teaching has changed. But to learn how to read has not changed. It just has not changed. So what we have to do is go back, and because the gap is so wide, you know, if you're in the seventh grade and you're reading on a third grade level, there are 4 years of missing information, because to be a accurate reader, you have to have all the information sequentially. So some of the strategies, and Ms. Kirk was talking about it, is the tutoring. So I'm looking at how to tutor within the system. So instead of, you know, and I'm going to say this, and I know it makes a lot of educators mad, so we're trying to give them science and social studies and all other things that they can't handle. You got them in the eighth grade. You have an eighth grade level book, but they read on the fifth grade level. They're not getting it. So instead of trying to shove social studies down, there should be in the system the ability to shut down everything. And for 1 hour, I've talked about this with leading educators and with superintendents, for 1 hour to literally teach reading on every grade level, and you actually can. But somebody said it earlier, and I believe it was you, Ms. Kirk, is that they don't want it. They don't want to do it. But in this day and age that we live in, we have to do it because we're losing. I just saw where a district is 49% proficient in reading and 39% proficient in reading and 39% in math. That's out of 100. That's not good at all. That is not good at all. So the strategies that we need, you know, we don't need another, you know, like you said, the gentleman came along and developed something that they thought that they could do with the urban kids, and not realizing that there's a little difference you're dealing with. Because we say they have a behavior problem. I say they have a reading problem. We say that they have an emotional support problem. I say they have a reading problem. I say at the root of the majority of our students that we deal with in the public school, private, doesn't matter, Christian, is not that they are bad kids. It's just that they have reading problems, and we have not addressed the reading problem. If I have a student reading in the seventh grade and they're reading on the first grade level, then I have to make an adjustment as to how I can move that child out of that and move them at least two or three grade levels so that they can see success, so that their confidence can grow, and so that they now can determine that they want more and that they want better. So I believe that the school systems have got to change the regulations and the policies. Just showing up and getting a 70 doesn't work anymore.
Ouch! You're stepping on my toes.
You know what I'm referencing, because you know they call it special ed, but there's nothing special about special ed.
Watch that, man. Watch that, man. Okay. Absolutely. So when it comes to actually reading, I was hearing what you were saying. One of the prerequisite skills, as you well know, is that you have to be able to sit still and to concentrate for a period of time. You're not going to do well if you can't do it. There are some adults who cannot sit still long enough to concentrate and read a passage and to be able to deduct reason from it, draw a conclusion, and things of that nature, right? And, you know, not beating you up, but what you're saying is part of it is learning to be disciplined, right, so that you can focus and pay attention and to pay attention to certain details that you're able to recall and then draw some conclusion. And you know, in our experiences in urban America, we're always on the run. Children have 24-hour-a-day access to all kind of stuff flowing at them through the media. And most of them are outside when they need to be in the house, right? A lot of good parents are working hard trying to provide for them, and there are just a lot of distractions. And it begs the question, what specifically can we do to address that particular issue so that people like Dr. Benjamin will be able to reach your students and they retain the information she's trying to give them? I'm sorry, Doc. Go ahead. Anything else to add to that?
No, and when you were saying that, there are a lot of factors in this. When you talk about it, because you were talking about a attention span just now, and then and to be able to retain information. And so our classroom, I believe that the classrooms have to be designed to allow the students to move, because they're not going to sit still. They are not going to, as a matter of fact, I'm not going to sit still. So I already know that when you come in my class, you're going to be able to move. You'll be able to do things that you normally, you know, in a classroom, you have to sit in a straight row. You know, the desk got to be in a straight row. You got to stand in a straight line. You have to, you know, and you know, part of that is really, now let's be for real, part of that is really prison mentality. It's almost a tandem for prison.
Well, they finally used that. Listen, I used to work there.
Did I say that?
Well, that's what I said. It is.
Part of it is preparing them for prison. Don't say anything.
Yes.
You know, don't move. You know, and I'm like, and then we diagnose them. We say they're ADD and ADHD and all kind of A's and D's and all kind of things. And so we diagnose them without the proper prognosis. We do it without giving them remedies, and we do it without giving them solutions to it.
Right.
You know, creating classrooms that you can have movement. Like in the classroom, when I go in the classroom, like I told you, I started today, there's movement in my classroom because I can't sit still. Look, I have ADDOP. That's I created that. That's attention deficit on purpose. So that means that after a while, if you're talking too long, I'm shut down. Okay, so just imagine the child in the classroom, you know, that, you know, you're lecturing, and before you know it, you know, they're hitting somebody in the head or something. So we have to create environment in school, at home, in the community centers, environment that will allow children to move without determining that they have a behavior problem. That's what I, you know, even with tutoring, because the first thing we say is that a behavior problem, or if they say something, you know, we say that's a behavior problem. So we have to look at cultures also as well as what we are dealing with. Like a student was asleep in my class today, and he said to me after, he came to me, he said, "Dr. Benjamin, I want to apologize because I know I'm not supposed to be asleep." He said, "And that, to me, I was disrespecting you. I am sorry." And he said, "That won't happen again." Well, I understand.
Okay.
It was the first day of school. You've been playing all summer. You said you're going to fall asleep. It wasn't the end of the day. I didn't write him up. I'm not calling his parents, and we're not sending him to the principal and all that kind of crazy stuff. You know, we have to make the adjustments as we go, because we're really dealing with a different time frame, and we're dealing with a whole set of different students as well as parents.
Sure, sure. Well said. You know, I was listening to what you were saying and thinking about the fact that educational psychologists suggest there are about 7 different learning styles known, and particularly African-American males have a kinesthetic modality. And they got to move. They have to move. And if you sit them still and force them against their will, you tend to have a problem. Now, one of the things is teaching operational skills, right, and being able to practice being operational in various settings and what have you. If that is not extended and reinforced in the home or the primary social environment, no matter what you do, every time you try to do that in the classroom, what you're going to see is what they're used to doing in the time that they're not with you, and that's the majority of their time. So it requires some communication, some connection, and like you're saying, Doc, some understanding of what they're bringing with them to that classroom. That's vitally important. And that what kind of mindset. You know, I remember, Doc, when I was teaching, we had young people, they had been up all night, Sunday, Saturday, and Friday, and some young girls were literally dancing in some of the strip clubs. Now, these high school students, man. And for me to expect them to be up and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on Monday morning trying to learn a subject, man, come on now, I'm sleepy right now. I need to catch me a little winks, and then maybe I catch up by third or fourth period, then I can talk to you. You understand what I'm saying? Those are
right,
some of the circumstances that
you're
saying. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Right, and so we have to look at some of the policies that, you know, some of the districts that demand you go, you start at a certain time and you end at a certain time. We have to make some adjustments For real, we have to make some adjustments based on the learning curve. You know, is early morning really the best time to teach? Or, they have to get up and catch a bus between 6:30 and 7, be in the classroom by, you know, get breakfast, be in the classroom by 7:30, you know, and then you're there almost elementary, you know, it starts at a different time, but you're there almost from till 2:15, 2:30, 2:45. And so the bulk of the day is trying to keep them focused. So, you know, how do we those adjustments to really create the constructivism that we need, that they need to learn? We don't know how some kids need to learn, you know what I'm saying? So we got to find out their need of learning and their ability of learning and retaining and then able to talk back. I said to some of the students, I said, if you read the words off the page, but you cannot explain it, you can't read. So they said, well, yes, I can. I said, you're reading the words off the page because the word thrown them off. I said, but comprehension is what we're talking about. And so, you know, of course they looked at me like I flew in from the moon. they want to argue. I can read. So I said, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm going to pull up the data. I said, okay. And so if you mess around and played on the test, then the data is who you are. I'm going to show you based on the data what they say who you are. So then everybody got real quiet when I said that, because they said, we never seen the information of what we do. So, you know, so I captured the attention right away today because I said, I'm going to show you what it says about you.
Right, right. Yeah, and then you'll be informed enough to show them what you say about yourself, right?
Absolutely. I said, because this is who you are. This is what you did. This is not what, you know, we want to say the teacher did this. And now, you know, Dr. and Ms. Kirk, you know that we have marginal teachers. You know we have teachers that are there just for the paycheck. But I believe that we have a larger number of teachers that, you know, really have a heart for this. But we do, and the same thing that we do with special ed students, the low students, we focus more on the low students than the students that's in the middle, because they're the larger number and they're the ones who slip through the crack. We don't have much for the advanced students and for the creative students, you know, and the gifted students. So we focus on the thing that we call the worst, which we have it wrong. You know, we really need to focus on those students in the middle that we could potentially reach if we would design education based on what they need and not based on our pacing guides and, you know, all that kind of thing. I say some curriculums, and I'm not saying that about your school, Dr., but some curriculums, I'm saying throw them away.
Throw them
away because it's not reaching anyone but the teacher.
Correct. And you're absolutely right. Often they're laced with a lot of professional jargon that the average parents don't really understand and don't even have time to try to figure out what you're talking about, right? But you're talking about it's just like somebody speaking in another language about you, and you don't know what they're saying. You understand what I mean? You're like, hey, wait a minute, you could be talking about my mama. Wait a minute, speak English. Talk to me.
No, you're right. I was getting my nails done the other day, and they started talking. I said, speak in English. I said, I need to know what you said. I don't know what you want to do, but you need to say what I need to understand. Don't be speaking that stuff. Speak in English. So you're right. Curriculum is not written in the language for the normal average person to understand. But we charge educators to follow curriculum that most of the time has not been revisited after 4 or 5 years, and you're still teaching something that's antiquated that you're trying to teach in the 21st century in the now, and it's not working.
Wow, powerful, powerful. Ladies, let me recognize one of our regular callers from Peoria, Illinois. We affectionately refer to her as Mama D. Mama D, we got some powerful ladies on here who are serious about the business tonight, and I got my pen and everything done to me a few things tonight. Welcome to our talk stream.
All right, hello, everyone. Thank you very much, and I'm just sitting in listening to the conversation.
All right. So what they're sharing with us is some methods and some research. You know, we've been talking, you've been with us for some years, and we've been talking about what the problem is. And some people thought I was putting down black males. No, we just got to tell the truth and call an ace a ace and a spade, right? But so mm-hmm. they're bringing us some really good information about if you're serious and you care. These are some things we can do to reach our people. We got Ms. Kirk on from Richmond, Virginia. She's about to come in. Now, Dr. Benjamin just talked to us about some reading strategies, considerations into account, right? And that's what she was talking about. Ms. Kirk is going to talk to us a little bit about how you respectfully approach a parent, whether they got a PhD or no kind of D. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Talk to us about how to engage people in a respectful way without making them feel like they, you know, like an ant on the ground or something. And then we also have, I want to call it beautiful, but I can't get away with that. 973, tell me, doctor, give me your name again, please. I'm sorry.
And Dr. Tully, call me Dr. T.
Dr. P, okay, all right. Dr. P, all right. So she's also joining us as well. And she's going to jump in here. She's going to get in where she fit in. You understand what I'm saying? So we're just going to have a good time tonight. You know what I mean? We got about another hour and about 14 minutes. We're going to do our thing. That's all we're going to do. That's, you know what I mean? You're at home. If you don't go to the refrigerator, you're just going to be hungry. That's all I got to say. All right. Thanks for joining us, well. We're going to go back to Doc. Did you want to say anything else before I turn it over to Ms. Kirk? Talk about how you engage parents.
Yeah, I want to hear this, Ms. Kirk.
hey, Doc, she's locked and loaded now. She's locked and loaded. Wait a minute.
Okay. Let's do it.
Well, I do believe that one of the things that's happening in the educational system right now is it's all about showcasing the unicorns. And so we've always been told we got to know more, do better to get the same thing in this racist system. You got to know your subject better than they do. You got to be better at your craft. So you're going to have to know more to get the same job that, you know, your counterpart slept all through college with a 2.0. So we understood that. I think what's happening is that one, I think the sister mentioned earlier about the healthcare system. There is a point of no return, and nobody wants to talk about that. You know, when your arteries are clogged and they're saying, hey, we got to go in and get a stent, it's too late to drink a good shake. It's too late to exercise. It's too – you can be motivated all day long. It's too late. And so we are being expected – the pedagogy, you were talking about this this brother that went into the sister class, studied what she did, and then went on and did something with it. And pedagogy in racism is nothing but theft. I mean, they are studying the drum machines, the beat machines, and all that hip-hop people using. Black folks aren't designing that. White folks designing that. Asian people designing that. We're not designing the drum machines and all of that, the technological stuff that go along with that. We're not the ones that are designing that. They go in, look at what we do, break it down into pieces, and say, oh, so that's how they do that. But what happens is that when a black person wants to do something and it's new, they're novice. When white people want to do something new, it's innovative. And so we second guess a lot of time our ability. So I say this to parents is that there is a point of no return, because the way the curriculum is moving now and as fast as the curriculum is moving, I catch you at seventh grade and you on a second grade level, and I got to keep pulling you out to teach you just how to decode and work on comprehension. You're not getting any information about the world. And one of the things that we do know is that we are a rich oral-based tradition. So when we teach, we can introduce vocabulary and with voice inflection, the kid can understand. Also, they may have never heard the word coincidence, but the way that I use the word coincidence, also, that's what that means. And so there's still something about knowledge. You cannot write about something that you don't know anything about. I don't care how well you can decode. If I give you a passage on biology and you've never heard of photosynthesis and you don't know what a mitochondria is and you've never heard of a granule or a vacuole or and you don't know any of that and you've never been exposed to that, then even though I'm reading, my mind is I cannot relax and my mind is now taking up too much space because I'm unfamiliar with the terminology. I'm unfamiliar with the word. And so I think that there is a point of no return. So if I keep pulling kids out to get them on target, they're missing out on, well, I talk about a subpoena. They've heard it, but what is a subpoena? Well, what does the Supreme Court do? What is the American Revolution? They've never heard any of this because we are so concentrated on teaching strategies to read. But I'll say, like, I heard Dr. Benjamin say she plays the piano. And one of the things, you know, that I may can trick you into playing an arpeggio and I can rule you and drill you till you can say that, but if you don't know the scale, if you don't know how to form a chord, if you don't know how to do any of that, then only thing I've done is taught you the front page, but I haven't taught you the back page. And we are producing programs that I call unicorns that are saying, listen, we're going to teach you front page to produce a front page result. But I cannot go in and give you 3 years of learning in 6 months. I can do a test that says you're reading on level, but it's impossible. It cannot be done. But they have sold us the bill of goods. Everybody else knows it can't be done. Everybody else knows you lose years of learning. I mean, catching up with that is the odds of that are just you're just so far behind. You're never gonna catch up. So I would tell parents in my program, I say, hey, listen, here's the bottom line. You've got to third grade. These years, all tutoring and all that, here's what we do know. If you're not on point by at least third grade, the likelihood of your child graduating from high school and being on level is about slim to none. And that's just reality, the way that the curriculum is moving. So there's a point of no return. So we have to let that parent know the urgency mm-hmm. of these beginning years, because I cannot, you know, we're pulling out these, we're showcasing these anomalies, but we know that if you don't get pregnant and you're not having a kid and that you can't afford and you go to school and all this whole kind of stuff, we know life is going to be easier. But what do? We showcase the ones that do it all backwards and say, see there, you can do it. They did it. Right. You can do it. But everybody knows that is an exception to the rule. The likelihood of you actually being able to do that is slim and none. Everybody else knows that. But what they do with black folks is we always showcase the anomaly. We don't, I mean, you know, well, they went to prison and they got a business now and she had 5 children and she graduated from law school and she did this and she didn't graduate from high school and she did that. And that's the kind of stuff that comes to our neighborhood and they give those kind of speeches to our children, which is not reality. So I think parents, I'll end with this. I think the way you talk to parents is you give them reality. Say that grade you got to give it to them straight. Your child ain't going to catch up. That's the reality. Your child is not going to catch up. And then reading, forget that. Writing is another skill that's separate from reading. And we don't even teach that anymore.
It's just now be able to read and do multiple choice, but then if I ask you to go do a paper and I'm looking at it, it looks like chicken scratch because you can't even put a sentence together and a thought process together. So all these skills, you can't make up for that in 6 months. I don't care what they're saying out here. You can't make up 3 and 4 years in 6 months. It just can't be done. I mean, I can give you a test or something and give you, you know, a false sense of security that you're now reading on an eighth grade level, but, you know, we know that probably doesn't translate into really reading on an eighth grade level.
I see what you're saying.
So I think you have to give it to the parents straight that, you know, there is a point of no return, and I think that that's what we're having to – I think that's the hard part about this illiteracy is that once a child gets so far behind, I mean, it's almost impossible to catch up and get on level and get on cue the way you need to. So I think you just need to give it to the parents straight. They got to get on
right.
point before a certain time.
Right, and it cannot be a thing. Year, and I really appreciate the way you are addressing the parent piece. And I had a student today, and I said, why am I here? He literally said, to give us the truth. Wow. He said, to give us the truth. Not to, you know, because you're right. I can't do this with the difference of all the students and the level that they're all on. You cannot do it within a school year. It's just impossible. But you're right. Mm-hmm. We are told that we can because so-and-so did it after they had a debacle in life, and you're right, and that's what we focus more on than reality. And then our counterparts, our white brothers and sisters, they are constantly walking their children through the process. We jump the process.
Mm-hmm.
We want the end result. But our white counterparts are teaching them the process, how to walk through this. Even if you make mm-hmm. a mistake, even if you mess up, how to get back up. But we're waiting, you know, until the whole, you know, life is almost a total disaster, and then all of a sudden a miracle happens. Like one parent said to me, my child can read the Bible. I said, really? And she said, but my son can't read, but they can read the Bible. I said, well, that's a miracle. I mean, we have to be
okay.
We're going to do a miracle.
All right. Well, Pastor Waller has joined us. He's our regular co-host. Pastor, we're talking about methods and resources, reaching and teaching. We have some guests on tonight, Dr. Roma Benjamin out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Ms. Benita Kirk is our featured guest out of Richmond, Virginia. And we have Dr. P on, who's with us as well. She has been tuned in with us, and Mama D out of Peoria, Illinois. So welcome, sir. And we're going to, in just a second, let me give you a chance to speak, and then we're going to go and give Dr. P an opportunity if she wants to speak. And then, as I promised, we'll be in our next hour pretty much then. I'll just kind of introduce some of the other topics, then we'll have a round-robin discussion there. We don't want to get 12 of you. We'll give her a chance. Pastor, welcome. Anything you want to say right quickly before we move on?
Well, no, I appreciate it. I'm just going to tune in and listen and welcome everyone who's on the show.
Okay.
I'm just going to listen to what's going on. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I tell you what, Pastor, they got me with a headache already. I ain't going to be able to go to sleep tonight without them asking. They dropped it like
that. Hey, man. Are they coming at you like that? I knew it was a lot of intelligent things going on, but I didn't put it in your headache, man.
Pastor speaks to the fact that I'm convinced that there are more people interested in proactive change than there are not. And too often the news media gives us that impression, and we get those hints and assertions from all over the place. But there are good people who just look for the right information, and they'll act on it. Isn't that right, Mama D? Just give them the right, give them the truth, and they know what to do with it. She may have muted her phone there. Jump in when you get a chance, Mom. All right. Well, having said that, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Again, our topic tonight is methods and resources, teaching and teaching. And we have our guest, Dr. Roma Benjamin, out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Ms. Bonita Kirk out of Richmond, Virginia, and we have on Dr. P, who is a college-level professor. We hope to hear from her soon. Pastor Ricky Wong, our co-host, and our good friend out of Peoria, Illinois, Mama D. We go back to our discussion. Give us a call here, 657-383-0944. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can call us right now. Facebook, thank you for following us. Feel free to post your question or comments. Dr. Benjamin and Ms. Kirk, I don't believe they would mind responding to anything that you post there. We'll be happy to share that next hour that we got going here on Talk Straight. Okay. All right. Having said all of that, we move forward. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. So I was listening to what you ladies were saying, and I said to myself, doggone, I don't stand a chance of an icicle in Hades. No pun. But the truth of the matter is, I think about Carter G. Woodson. He wrote the book Miseducation of the Negro, right? When you read his biography, you find out that he didn't go to high school until he was 20 years old. High school now. Because he grew up in a part of America where he had to work, his family had to work the field. They had to work hard to get what they wanted. But once he finally got past high school and went to college and he later on went on to get a PhD, he demonstrated that there's an adage in education. They ask the question, is the glass half empty or is it half full? And the idea is that you want to know where to begin pouring instruction, right? Because if you pour too much and it's half empty, you overflow. You got a mess on your hands. But if you pour too little and there's nothing in there, you fall short, right? And what that really calls for is appropriate assessment, pre and post assessment, basically. And without getting into a whole lot of educational jargon, I just want to make the point that if you don't know people, you don't know how to reach them, you're going to have a hard time teaching them. You don't understand them. A lot of times what that really means is you got to lose yourself. It cannot be about you in that classroom. That can be about the pupils. And anytime you come with the mentality that I'm certified, I'm the teacher, and I'm in charge, they'll let you know who's in charge when grade time comes. And that'll be a reflection on you. I want to introduce a couple of things. Bonita, I got three things that I want to talk about tonight. And we can continue our discussion in the future. But she put pressure on me. She pushed me in the corner and pointed a finger in my chest. I think it was red fingernail polish she had. Pushing me in the chest. Said, now, you come on. But I say that laughingly. But I want to talk about the work of three authors that co-authored the book, Dr. Thomas A. Parham, Dr. Joseph L. White, and Adisa Ajambo. They wrote a book entitled The Psychology of Blacks. And in it, I use this as a reference point for my research and putting my school model together. Some of the things that they focus on appropriately are the African-American family and its direct correlation to teaching and learning. They make this point quite well, and that's very important. Some other things that they talk about is understanding how people identify themselves, right? They talk about the importance of the community, right, and understanding how health factors into learning, physical, emotional health, all those things. Now, why are you saying that, Doc? Why are you saying that? Because I think they correctly identified that anybody can learn under the right circumstances. And what are the right circumstances? That they are equipped and they're prepared and they're guided in that process. The reason we have parents, God gave us parents, I'm convinced, is because children are going to need somebody to feed them, to clothe them, to nourish them, to rear them, right? And that's the one thing that nobody can take away from a parent, that natural bond and connection, that natural bond. I remember my son was a little baby in the bed, and, you know, I tried to put him in the baby bed. He wasn't having that because he wanted to be close to the milk. And he got to a point where he pushed me out the way. Hold up, man. I'm trying to get close to this milk, brother. You in the way. I say that to say that there is a natural bond. And one of the things that we have to do is to spend time assessing where the parents are relative to their understanding of their children's needs, and more importantly, how they can work as a partner with a teacher, a principal, or an educational institution in the growth and development, academic growth and development of their children. That's vitally important. If you don't have, a lot of times what happens is the government runs schools, public schools, and the government tells you what to do, when to do, how to do, what to think. Well, that only works when they have to be there under compulsory school attendance. When they go home, guess what the government can't control? What happens at home? What happens at home? You understand what I'm saying? And that's the balance that people say they are the authority in the brick-and-mortar fabricated environment of a classroom. They're battling with the reality of what those babies deal with when they ain't there. Over the summer, and we just had a whole year where schools were essentially shut down, and we had loss of learning, major loss of learning. Some of them were 2 or 3 years behind in mastery already. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Those are things that we have to so I just want to introduce, again, the psychology of black. They did an African-centered perspective. They did an excellent job, I believe, of at least introducing some things of consideration for teaching and learning. The other thing is Visions for Black Men by this brother by the name of Naeem Akbar. This kid right here, I think Pastor Wally's been a black male before because he went deep. He went deep there understanding psychologically and culturally what it means to shape a young mind, particularly a young male in this society in America. There are traps set for them. And many of them, unfortunately, in urban America, don't live to see past 21 years old. Not everybody, but too many of them are so caught in the trap. They experience one or two types of death. Either a social death, where they're extricated from society in the prison, or a physical death, where they literally die and check out ahead of time. We have got to stop that. The devil is alive. The devil is alive. That's where our focus needs to be, understanding from the time they're born. See, right now, if you take a child that's born in a hospital, whatever city, where is their home? Where are they going after they leave the hospital? What is the zip code that they're going to? The Bureau of Vital Statistics can make some predictions about them 18 years later. That's deep right there. Now, what we have to do is empower parents to be the deciding factor from the time they're born, leave the hospital, and they reach 18, what their life projection is. That's the power that a parent has. That's the power that a parent has. And Brother Akbar was very specific about some things that are needed, particularly for males. I think appropriately and respectively they're appropriate for females as well, but we were particularly talking about black males in that regard. Now, at the risk of patting myself on the back, I'm going to talk about a piece of literature that I authored, and this was in 2010. I wrote a workbook, and I shared it with Metro School District and a school district in Pontiac, Michigan. I did some seminars and workshops. And it was entitled Parental Involvement Training. It was a workbook. And beneath it, the primary focus was helping parents to understand, one, you have rights as a parent. But with those rights come responsibility. What is that responsibility? To make sure you watch Dockery and everybody else that's standing before your children and make sure they're not being a deleterious influence on them. You have a
right
to make sure your child gets the best education, but a responsibility to know, not to be an expert, and teaching and instruction, but to know what's expected. You need to know what the state's curriculum that they say it is, and need to know on every grade what they ought to be teaching your children. What level and mastery should they have in reading and writing and math and other subjects from the pre-K all the way to 12th grade? And if they're not telling you that, they're throwing a bunch of jargon and jibber-jabber at you and making you feel like you lower than an ant, that ain't helping, is it? So what we
That's
have to
right.
do, as Scott said earlier, we part of the reform is we've got to collectively come together as parents and say that there are certain negotiables and non-negotiables for us and our children in public school settings, in school and local educational agencies, State Department of Education. Here are our demands. You say we got to be there because of compulsory school attendance? Well, this is what you got to give us. Otherwise, we're not there. Maybe we need to start our own program. Or maybe we need to focus on homeschooling. If you can't give us what we demand, not ask for, demand. And parents, that's your power, that's your right. One of the other things that I focus on in my parental involvement workbook is how to teach parents to create a similar type of environment at home for their children. Not to say you have a classroom. But when they come home with homework, they need to have the materials that they need to complete the homework. Are y'all with me? If they're sitting home with a project or with an assignment, parents need to make sure that the necessary resources to complete that while they're at home are there. That means maybe during Christmas we're going to buy some educational aids as opposed to a bunch of junk toys. Help me, Holy Ghost.
Right.
I'm down in the valley all by myself. I can't hear nobody. Maybe what we need to do is to budget and prioritize our spending to make sure that to have extra skill and drill, we have certain materials around the house to maintain a language-rich environment for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may not know what rich is, but you know what I'm talking about. And if you're working with them right, you can break it down on a level so they can do that. And guess what happens? The child wins then when we do that. The child wins.
Right.
Now, Benita, I was using No Child Left Behind legislation, Section 1118, because that was the law that said certain things have to happen if you're getting federal Title I dollars. They weren't happening. And I wanted to make sure parents understood why that money should go to them and how and why they should control that money in the interest of their children. There are a lot of resources that people don't know exist. And when you don't know, anybody can make a fool out of you. Hallie got witness? I didn't call you. You understand what I'm saying? The other thing is, one of the other factors that I looked at in the workbook is community engagement. Now, that's
right.
Qualification international. And I'm going to shut up, and we're going to go to our round robin in just a second. The mayor at the time, Carl Dean, I went to him, and I told him, I said, look, I don't like what's happening to particularly black males in the public schools. And I guess the fact that this person came up telling me to what? But he listened. And he reached out to me and asked me to be a part of a 40-member task force to address the public school system in Houston County. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. Well, make a long story short, what I laid out in my contribution was how churches that usually are closed 5 days a week and only open 2 days on whatever your Bible study night is, unless you have an
assessment
program. That is real estate and resource that is unused in the black community. Now, what's wrong with us? Who you waiting on? Jesus? Superman? Batman? Or the Easter Bunny? They ain't coming. You have to do that. If you don't do it, it ain't going to happen. Y'all understand what I'm saying? It's important that not only we work with the parents, but communities. Now, when we talk about communities, usually what you hear are people that own businesses, that people that make money off of folks, and they're glad to see young black males run around with their behinds out, acting like a monkey and a clown because they get money off. Can I, y'all, this is talk straight, so let me just don't talk. They're not happy to see you doing that because they know their pockets gonna keep getting fat. That's what I call the trap. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, so if you talk about the community, who is the community? See, what we have done as a people, we've learned to turn on ourselves emotionally and socially such that we take the neighbor out of the neighborhood. And the building block of a community is a group of neighborhoods that come together. And in that neighborhood, you have families that make it up. If y'all are not together, what kind of community do you think you own? These are some of the conversations that we need to have with parents now. Yeah, you can teach the content material in the school, but parents need to understand these facts right here. And that's how you hold a school. Then here's another thing. Now let me ask y'all a question right quickly. Benita, if you and I are in the classroom and I pull your hair, you turn around and smack me, which one of us going to be charged with assault? No. Both of us. Because by definition, assault is any time you strike someone and you hit them, irregardless of what the reason is. Now, you may come back and say it was self-defense, but it's still assault. What I'm trying to get at is basic legal jargons that our babies don't know why they're breaking the law and why they get in trouble. I saw a teacher and came to her class. He had just listened to a rap song, and he said, yeah, had his hands in the air, talking about that chopper. And she was asking him about a helicopter. She thought he was threatening her by motioning a gun. Do you know she wrote him up and sent him to the office? It speaks to this breakdown in communication and understanding.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not saying because she was a young Caucasian female, fresh out of college, that she didn't understand anything about the hood. But I should say that, shouldn't I? Somebody should have taught her. Baby, these young children around here, they're very familiar with weapons because they are all in the hood and off the black market. That's a whole other conversation. I ain't going to go there. But I'm just saying, these are some of the realities and the nuances that are barriers to learning. And if we don't take control of, who is the we? Who are you talking about, Doctor? I'm talking about Negro, black, and colored folk who got children in these public schools. These are your babies. These are our babies. And we must demand, sir. Whether it's a private school or public school. Now, the thing about private schools is when people pay money, they get to have a lot of say, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
But don't y'all know we pay money through our taxes? And what most people don't know is you got a lot of say. I bet you if you stop giving your taxes or you pull them children out and they don't get that per pupil spending, that would get their attention real quick, won't it, Dr. Benson?
It sure will.
Like somebody else. Yeah, I'm not telling you to do that now. Don't go say Dr. Benson. We talking. Here's the last thing, and then I want to open up the floor. We have got to realize, and this is one of the things that I think is severe, there are a lot of unaccepted and undiagnosed mental health issues among our people. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I understand historically there are some stigmas. Especially church folk, they say, the Lord don't take care of me. He understands. I don't need to go see no doctor. But now, when we see certain things in our behaviors, certain behavior in our children early on, it's vitally important that we reach out to find out and understand how to do that. But for instance, one of the main reasons children don't do well in school is if they have their eyes are not properly assessed. They can't read the board too well. And if you force them to sit somewhere that they can't read, you set them up for failure. You think they're just being obstinate. But there's a problem. Are y'all walking with me?
Absolutely.
I had a battle with a behavioral psychologist, but I told him, look, man, stop pushing these drugs on our babies, talking about the ADHD and all this old mess. Because what I discovered as a special ed teacher is some of them young cats, when you grab them and you tell them, take them around the back, tell them to help you accept Jesus Christ as your personal savior, they understand fully what you're talking about. That breaks a lot of that mess up right there. Right there. So I said that to say that, and as we opened up the conversation, 12 has been listening. Let's give her an opportunity to weigh in here. That I like the way Dr. Benjamin laid it down in terms of the strategies for reading. I love the way Ms. Kirch identified the fact that really parents need to be on good foot. And I just want to say one last thing about that, Ms. Kirch, something you said. If you tell somebody you got to get caught up with your reading mastery and proficiency, even though you're 3 and 4 grade levels behind, this year you got to get it or else, you send them up for failure. But what is necessary is for you to go back to the first standardized test they took and look and see where did they leave off, what level and mastery did they leave off. It's there that you begin to focus remedial instruction to get them up at an appropriate level, at the level that they can perform. But to beat them up and say, if you don't keep up with the rest of the group, something is wrong with you. That's wrong. That's emotional blackmail.
Right.
And that happens often. And for them, that's emotional blackmail. To suggest to somebody that if you don't keep up with the Joneses, you don't do just like everybody else, something is wrong with you. And that's what happens too often. That's something we need to break up. But I see my brother out of Selma, Alabama. I'm coming right to you, Don. Let me go to 8112. Don, we're talking from the topic, methods and resources, reaching and teaching. We're talking about breaking the cycle now. We know what the problem is. We got some sisters on, Don, now, and they've been dropping it like it's hot now. So just give a minute to kind of hear what it comes and then do it. 8112, what can you share with us before we move forward?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Anything you want to share with us before we move forward?
I'm listening very intentively. I'm hearing what I'm hearing, but the way I look at it, I don't have any little kids outside of my grandchildren now, and they spend more time with their parents, which they're supposed to. However,
right, right.
As far as the educational part of it, as you were speaking, it's never too late to learn anything as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
At no age are you too young, well, babies, and they not too young at a certain point, after a certain point to learn. However, if you give up and you are an educator, then when they walk into the schoolhouse, they don't stand a chance to begin with.
Wow.
Because they're walking into something with someone there with, most of the time, they're homeroom teacher for at least 6 hours of the day.
Okay.
And the other two spit with their other teachers, maybe a couple of them. So if the teacher has given up on a student, saying they're too far behind, they can't play catch up. Some kids are very easily taught. And I am an educator because I gave birth to 7 children, so I've educated them, homeschooled and all.
All right now.
All right. So we struggle together.
Okay.
And one of my main issues was that you go to school. I didn't like school because people were mean in school.
I see.
And when you can't go to your teacher and share, that's why a lot of kids have been committing suicide because they're afraid to tell their parents because they got them boosted so high for their whatever reason, that they don't even know how to share that they are suffering.
Right.
And some parents can't see that they're suffering because they're caught up in their social life, which is their business life. And for a child, it's destructive because I can't let my mommy or my daddy down. I can't talk to so-and-so, so-and-so. Grandma's not here. Grandpa's not around. Sometimes, and it's kind of like that flip side I always talk about. You have not walked in them kids' shoes, and after they even going to the school, you got a teacher don't believe in you, and that's your parent.
Right.
However many hours of the day, that that's your parent. They're supposed to treat you, even though they have kids of their own, they're probably having a hard day, even with their own family style life. You have to separate them.
Okay. Okay. Man. Wow.
I'm not no educator in the school field, but I am an educator.
Right now. All right now. I cut that. Well, thank you so much, 12. We appreciate you weighing in on this. Let me, 973-6168, Dr. P. Come on, give me some. Give me some I can take on with me, Dr. P.
Well, actually, it's a pleasure to just be with listening to Dr. Benjamin and Kurt and everyone. But you know, we have to face the fact, you know, and we got to prioritize some things. So as we're shifting, you make a valid point when you say you reach the parents, you reach the students, because the home is the foundation. And so, unfortunately, it potentially sets them up to fail, because when you shift the cultural environment, then the game will change. And so the village is necessary in this season. It's so necessary for us to come back together. I was raised where the village raised me. It wasn't just my mother. It was the whole community. By the time you got home, everybody knew what you did, how you did it, and why. You know, you got five beatings before you got the real beat down. And so the reading and the educational, it impacts our economy. And so when we fail to even understand how economically the system, when we fail to read and educate our system, you know, our kids, it affects us. So the cultural environment impacts our brown and black girls and boys, because if they are being chased by gangs and they're chasing the green and they're trying to survive, then why is reading important? And so we know why it's important, but we have to now be able to change the narrative to be able to teach them why it's important, because it changes on the higher level. Because what happens in the higher level of education, most of the time either their education is paid for, or they have scholarships or financial aid, or it's been reinforced to them on why education is so important. And so it changes. The level of responsibility has shifted in higher ed. And so when you have the lower ed from, you know, middle school and high school, it becomes different, because the responsibility without partnership is just chaos. And so when you don't, like you said, I really love what you said about the parents. You can't even leave them out. You can't leave the parents out, and you can't leave the community out. So you have to give a proper perspective that meets their present reality and also meets their future needs. Because the responsibility is always shifted in education consistently. The weight is always shifted to the next teacher, for, you know, shucking the blame, shifting the blame on the former teacher, this one, that one. And that cycle has to shift. But if you don't reach the parents and tell them why it's important, then it passes on to their children. And so you're going, it's like a hamster just, you know, recycling its wheels. But you have to understand, like Dr. Benjamin said, data is essential, because information leads to transformation. And so we got to get to a point where we have to now take back the bulls by the horn, and like you said, also meet their real needs, because emotionally that's part of the major problem too. And when we don't deal with those emotions and those triggers and the trauma of black people, it continues. It's going to leak. It's going to leak in the schools, from the home to the schools. It's going to leak there to the churches. And then it has a perpetual cycle. And it's just never ending. And so you get to the root. You will never kill a thing. You'll never heal it until you get to the root. And we're going around the root. You got to get to the root, the source.
Okay, wow. So what I'm hearing is that they can read if you got the right people on the team. Is that what I'm hearing?
Wow. Yes, absolutely.
So the assumption that they can't, they just ain't going to make it, they can't, that's a false assumption. That's a fallacy. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. See, Doc, that's what I'm talking about. Y'all got me. I got a headache. I need to go get some ibuprofen. Well said. I appreciate it. Let me recognize Brother out of Selma, Alabama, 4892. 4892, welcome. Uh-oh, look like we just dropped. We just lost. Maybe he'll call back there. Pastor, you want to weigh in right quickly, sir? He's probably new.
I think you got a lot going on.
Oh,
I think you got a lot going on in the background. And, you know, you was talking about, you know, I think someone said about how to play the game, because there's game that is being played.
Mm-hmm.
And whether one wants to accept it or not, learn how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
So when the teacher and the student get together, I'm not talking about when the teacher clock in and the student come to school. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when the teacher and the student get together, there's going to be some teaching and some learning on both ends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's necessary. The teacher's going to learn about the student, and the student's going to learn about the teacher when it's really a great concern. Because if we don't learn, meaning that street will teach you. That's what I'm saying, the street will do.
That's fine.
I came from the streets, so I know that the streets will teach you. Now, I was that ignorant individual that went to school, got caught in a trap, and I got more involved in the trap because it didn't look like a trap. It didn't sound like I was in a trap, and it didn't even feel like I was in a trap. Most kids today that walk in a trap don't even know that they're in a trap.
Wow.
That's why it's going to take some teaching.
Mm.
I mean, some real teaching, because if that does not take place, we will get more of the same. And the reason I'm saying that is that we got some intelligent people on the line right now that's willing to give out information just like it's going on right now.
Right.
Now,
right.
I used to hear things like this, Pastor Doctor. They say when the students show up, the teacher will appear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's why when class began to start when the teachers show up, because the students are there ready to be taught, and if they're not teaching them, getting down to their level to bring them up to theirs, you give them an hour of your time. Sometimes, you know, you're not going to be able to reach one kid in there when you got 5 kids or 10 kids, and don't mention I only have 20 of them in there, you know, and you're talking about changing class in an hour and things like that. I'm just using for an example. My own experience that if somebody had told me that I was in a trap, I never heard that. I came to school and I was school where I wasn't supposed to have certain things, I'm sure, but I had so much of everything when it came down to it. So I was looked at like, who is this guy? I know he's not supposed to have. Every time you turn around, you got a different pair of shoes on. He's not supposed to have that. And I mean, I'm using that for an example. I've already been stereotyped, you know. And I had a friend of mine that was very smart that went to school with me. We grew up together. And his whole family was very smart. Now, the lady that was at the school, I don't want to say who the lady was, but she went to my friend and asked him, why did he hang around with me? Could you imagine? He's my friend. We play basketball together and things like that. And they asked him, why did he hang around with me? I guess they looked at me as a thug, coming to me in another way. They already sized me up to think that of me. But my partner told me, but I'm using that for an example. So why would they say something like that? Why do you hang around with him? Like, I guess I was a bad influence. I guess that's what they was probably basically saying. So it's tough, man, when you don't have the teacher with the best interest in heart, and you're just going for what you know. And, of course, being at home, you know, that's where you be in school at a certain time and you leave at a certain time. But when you're back at home, you say the government have control. Is that what you said, Pastor Doctor? Have control by the people that are in school?
But once they
get at home, so just think now, if they trying to have control when they're out of school, you can only imagine what we're dealing with then. Because if they got control while they're in school, man, that's pretty deep there, brother.
Because if
we can't discipline them, I heard somebody on here say, I'm going to turn it over to you when I say this. I heard someone say about the village raising the person.
Uh-oh.
And not only if one got a whooping, I heard him say a beat down. Not once,
what?
Not twice before they even got home. They have got about five of them. And nobody said anything about calling nobody to say my parents or my neighbor whooped me. And none of that. I didn't hear him say that. But now you can't even discipline your own kids.
Mm.
That's control out of school, man.
Mm.
Are you a better? You don't know.
Okay.
What do you
think? Great. Okay. All right. We got about 24 minutes here to go. Don, you want to weigh in there, big brother? We lost you at first, but you're back.
Yes, I'm here in Selma, Alabama, Mr. Darkman. I'm really experiencing tragic things with me and my son. I said tragic. And then I'm going to say this, Mr. Darkman. I'm in Selma, Alabama. Won't you listen to me good? There is no leadership here. Let's be clear. There is no leadership in Selma.
Okay.
Man, I'm over here, Mr. Darkman, over here on Highland. And this Arab made the assumption that I'm crazy. If I'm crazy, he crazy. And let me break it down to you. Your daughter's going to Wallace Community College, which is sitting on Congressman Benjamin Turner's land. Your daughter's going to Wallace Community College. I want people to hear me good. Community College is sitting on Congressman Benjamin Turner. Scottish Rite Ku Klux Klan Mason. So how is you coming from the East and your daughter speak Arabic over in the Ku Klux Klansman named school? Something wrong with that picture. And Mr. Doctor, let me say this to listen all this. My father got the right to vote ideal from Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass's great-great-grandmother, Betsy Bailey, he hit the eastern shores of Maryland speaking Arabic. What is wrong with our people when we don't want to gravitate to our culture? Something is wrong with us.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what we've been talking about, my friend, all evening. And we've been talking about it in terms of the resources and the methods to get us to understand, hey, and there is a very powerful cultural aspect to our success, to our learning, growth, and development. And one of the things I'm convinced of is, as well defined by Lerone Bennett and Dr. Franklin, is that during the seasoning process, during slavery, we lost so much of our connection to heritage, identity, and purpose that we don't even know who we are no more. It's kind of like taking a pit bull and putting him around a bunch of Persian kittens. Before long, he'd be hollering, meow, help us. I mean, what do you do? But there's hope, though. The good news is that there is hope, and we're glad that we have people here who understand. Dr. P, let me ask you, being a teaching on the collegiate level, post-secondary level, is there any hope that parents can translate some of this information to educational programs that are teaching teachers and what have you, so that they can be aware of these nuances and factors?
Doc, can you repeat that one more time, please?
Yes, ma'am. So I was asking, is there any hope that some of the concepts that we're talking about tonight, that they can be placed in some of the teacher training programs and on the collegiate level? I understand you teach on the collegiate level now.
Yes. And so it can change in the collegiate level because, you know, there's a little bit more flexibility and to a certain degree. But I do believe that when you incorporate those type of systems and programs on the higher level, you can go back. Sometimes, you know, as I believe Ms. Kurt said, there is a point of no return, but it doesn't mean you can't return. And so you have to be able to go, you know, get to where you need to get and then go back and reach back and extend a hand. And so, you know, so I believe once you go higher up, then you can go back. You can go back and reach out.
Okay. Dr. Benjamin, you know what I'm beginning to believe?
No, sir. What is it?
I'm beginning to think we create our own parent university.
Mm-hmm. I want to, first of all, know how to get your book, because it's really sowing something on the collegiate level. The collegiate level has actually dismissed the parent out of the process of the child.
Yes, they have.
Because
yes,
even
have.
In education, they want you to, they want the child from age 14 to make decisions. So by the time you get to college, the parents are kind of like obsolete to the process. So,
wow.
Like I said, we have to go back and look at the policies and the regs that we have allowed to exist for many, many years that we have just accepted. You know, I call it breaking the rules, breaking to literally go against the status quo, you know, to say stuff that's going to really tick people off. I want to use a different word, but I'll just be a little decent. But we really accept stuff. Oh, come on, Miss Kirk. You know we can say certain words certain ways. But we really need to really make people mad.
Yeah.
And that process, we need to make parents mad. You're right, Dr. Rubin. If we go back and deal with the parents and really bring it in a perspective that is positive, not, you know, not anti and not trying to make them do anything, but show them the way, you know.
That's right.
We have to
That's
show
right.
them. And we're pastors, you know, we deal with it from more than one perspective. We deal with it from the academia. We deal it from the intellectual. We deal it from the spiritual. So we have to be able to show people the way.
Somebody and, you know,
may I say something real quick, you guys, please?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I wanted to thank the doctor that spoke and clarified some things for me, because I didn't think that I misunderstood, but then you came back and you enlightened me on the subject of the point of no return.
Okay.
Because I'm sure some others probably took that the way that I took it. But you wasn't saying that. You were saying once you come up, then you can reach back and grab and hold on. Is that what you were saying, asking?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you so much for that.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
No, I was just going to say that I appreciate everybody. Wow, great information. I was just going to, by the way, the show is recorded. If you want to take note of it, we're doing live stream on Facebook. But blogtalkradio.com/BSC Institute, you can go back there and listen to the show as many times as you want, and you can actually download it if you so choose for your own archival records there. But, you know, when we think about it, I like what Dr. Benjamin said. You can't come up to people talking crazy about what you think they need to do and what's wrong with them, because they may just go crazy on you. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And Dr. Benjamin, you're a pastor, Pastor Waller. One of the things that parents can do is hold leadership in our religious institutions accountable for ensuring that they're doing everything they can to use the real estate and resources.
Absolutely.
There to help in these neighborhoods. It's a shame that you can have four or five churches in a 10-block radius and you got the highest murder rate in the country.
That's true.
Explain it to me. Now, I know God is able.
Crazy.
And Pastor Waller would tell you that with God, all things are possible. So I just believe it's possible for us to get off our feet of do-nothing as preachers, as pastors, and really have a substantive effect in our neighborhoods and our communities. Either that, or get off the pot. Let somebody else have it. Where did I go wrong?
That's what I mean. Make mad. I mean, just we have to stop, you know, placating people and pacifying them and patting them on their back and telling them they're okay when they're not. Doctor, I started a program with, you know, to bring churches to the forefront, you know, because the church should be in the forefront. And created a program to use their buildings to create, you know, in certain parts of the city. And when you said it, I was like, man, it sounds like he's been sitting right here with me. And I did it. I created it. You know, I created a process to train people. I said, I have all the degrees, All you need is a desire, and we can work this together. And, you know, I got responses, you know, and I know there's another pastor online. I got responses like, what am I going to get out of this? How much money? And then I have people saying, well, do you have any free computers? Listen, salvation is not even free. Why are you asking me for free computers? You have to pay for something. You have to, if you value it, you pay for it. You know, so I work on a program like that where parents can literally see how their students, how their child functions so that we can connect the parent, the church. I even went to daycares and community, to the Y, to the Boys and Girls Club, and everybody had the same old sad story is, you know, money and what am I going to get out of it, and, you know, what position am I going to hold. So, you know, I'm one to break the rules. I'm not the one to play with this.
I like to
make it look pretty. It's not pretty. It's ugly.
I like that, Doc. I like that. Listen, if the devil is walk around smiling and happy, somebody ain't on the job, buddy. He ought to be
exactly.
mad.
Exactly.
He ought to be frustrated.
Right, so we got to put the neighbor back in the hood, just like you were saying. We're the neighborhood, because we took the neighbor out and we turned it into the hood. Now we have to put the neighbor back into the hood where we are really connected to one another. You know, whether we call it, you know, village or whatever we want to call it, but we have to stay connected. That means that you're learning and you're attaining as you go. You don't know everything. You don't have everything, but you're attaining as you go, and you're bringing others along with you. Like you can return. You can recover.
Absolutely. I'm going to say something. On Talk Straight, we got 13 minutes, Pastor Wallace. I'm gonna say something, and y'all catch this on your way home. But look here, when you take the convenience of resource and ready opportunity from people, they may be a little bit motivated, a little bit more motivated, get off their tail and do something for themselves. Maybe we've been too spoiled with integration.
Mm.
Let me say it again. Maybe integration has spoiled so much that too many of us don't think we got to work for nothing. Somebody's got to give it to us. What did I go wrong now? Come on, ladies. Y'all been on me all night. What did I go wrong?
You'd be surprised.
Well, I just like
there's
to
a
say
lot
something.
Of people don't want you to give them anything. There's a lot
okay.
of people that live by demand, not by choice. And that
okay.
is the problem. Some other people, they think because you're not working that you want them to give it to you, give it to them, even though you don't know if they're working or not. They could be working two jobs and get some help from the government.
I see. I can appreciate that. You know.
See, but do you? No, you don't feel me because maybe you never had to do that.
No,
I did.
Wait.
I worked two jobs, went to school part-time, and took care of my children. I did that. So that's why I speak passionately about it.
Yes.
For someone that didn't have to do it, they can come at a different angle, and I respect that because they didn't have to. But everyone is not like that. There's a lot of people out here that does work. They go to school. They do try to better themselves for themselves as well as their children first and then themselves. And they make a lot of sacrifices. And they suffer. Yeah. They take a lot of beatings from it. Because some people, God, forgive me if I'm saying this wrong, some people feel like you want them to hand you their tax-paying money. Well, hell, they pay taxes too.
Okay. Well,
okay,
12.
True or not true, though?
12, you know me well enough to know I'm straight out the hood, right? Born and raised in the ghettos of Chicago. You know that, right? You know that.
But I also with all due respect, and I love you like peanut butter and jelly, baby, but sometimes when we get where we feel comfortable, even though we're reaching out to help as many as we can, you can't save everybody.
Well,
I don't care who you are.
I'm trying.
But for everyone that you do help, maybe five or six have followed in suit, and that's for any of us.
But, hey,
whatever
you
do.
I agree with you. I think we're saying the same thing. But all I'm saying is I have been through enough to tell somebody else how to get through it. You understand what I'm saying? And I know this, that if you don't take the spoon, dig your food, and put it in your mouth and chew, you're going to be hungry a long time. Now, I know enough to tell you that. I know enough to tell you to do that, man. And if I'm telling you that, just go look at it. Look at the food and dream about it. You're going to be you. Before long, you'll drop over and die. That you die for stuff. I'm trying to tell people to break the spoon. That's all I'm saying. I've been there, and that's why I can tell them that, because I've been there. I didn't get where I am now without some bumps and bruises. Now, I don't sit on the table and cry about them and tell nobody about them. You understand what I'm saying?
Sir.
I'm grateful. If it wasn't for God,
yes,
I'd have been dead a long time ago. If it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be here. So I see what you're saying. You're right.
There are
people who just struggle. We got people that are struggling. And that's kind of what we're talking about, Swell. We're talking about how to, you know. But now, some of my brothers and my sisters, I said my brothers and my sisters, if I could take them around the back and tell them, look here, I'm going to introduce you to Jesus Christ, help them become your personal savior, their life will be better. You understand what I'm saying? So that's all I'm saying. So,
I always said either you sink or swim.
Well, that's
meaning,
true.
Why would I choose to sink if I can try to swim? Even if I don't know how to swim, I fall down, fall short, or die trying to swim to keep from drowning.
Trying to preach on me, girl. Why are you trying to preach on me? No, I received that. I received it. Wow, look at Pastor Waller. What are you doing with the clock, man? We got about 8 minutes. Let me get my guest.
Not again.
again. Let me give my guest an opportunity. And by extension, we're talking about YouTube 97. 973. Let me give the guests an opportunity to give a final, you know, their final thought for the night, and then we'll go around the table and hear from everybody else. Let's start with you, Dr. Benjamin. I'm sorry.
I appreciate the time and everyone's input, and you know, just looking at how we could come up with strategies that does not turn into tragedy. Deal with now, you know, based on our research and our data and how to do better. How to do excellent and to look at our people and bring them to a place that they've never been before, whether it's spiritual, intellectual, academia, it doesn't matter. We have the power to do it, and so let's collaborate and connect in order to get it done.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you know, I'm going to say like Joe, Jacob, I ain't going to turn you loose till you bless my soul. Look for me to be in touch with you here.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks to have you back, because we got a lot of work to do. Ms. Kirk is the one. She's an instigator. She started all this mess. Go ahead, Ms. Kirk.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Well, you know, I think it's important that we talk about line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. Foundation, fundamentals, you've got to have basic fundamentals. And so without basic fundamentals, the system is basically saying, we will not give your children the foundation that they need. Now after they get so bad, okay, then we'll give you a trick and a pony and 100 different reading programs and reading specialists and interventionists and all that kind of stuff. But we will not give you ground to stand on, and that's what I'm against, is that all the resources come after the fact. So you're telling me that you cannot create an environment that gives our kids a foundation to build on. It's kind of like, okay, you're willing to do all the work after the fact, and I think that's what needs to stop being accepted, that you cannot give our kids the foundation that they need. What everybody else is doing is making sure their kids got a good foundation. Because you got a good foundation, then we can tweak it, we can add on to it, we can go back and maybe close some gaps in that. But when you don't have a foundation to work with, you're asking us to build air castles. I mean, so the system is saying, okay, we're gonna utilize all your resources, your brightest, and all of that, but they're creating systems where the average is able to succeed. We've always got to be extra, you know, Superman and all that old kind of stuff in order to get something done, and that's not how everybody else is doing it. But this is what they are relegating the poor community to, is that you've got to have all this outstanding stuff and refuse to give our kids the foundation that they need. And that's my only gripe, is that, because if you've got a foundation, then you can do something with someone that's got a foundation. But when you don't have a foundation, you're trying to make up too much ground that to me is just almost impossible to do.
Yeah. We're going to build that foundation together. We're going to do that together. All right? If it kills us, that's what we're going to do. I appreciate it. Thank you. I hate to rush everybody. We've got about 3.5 minutes here, but I want to hear from Dr. P right quickly. Doc, if you could give us a final thought, and then we'll go to everyone else.
I just appreciate being invited into the conversation. But as our sister just said, Ms. Kurt, you know, she said, the foundation is so, I can't say, you know, you got to tear down. You got to tear some things down. So as Dr. Benjamin said, but I will say this, we can't just teach our kids not to, if they don't think, then they have to swim, but we have to teach them that they can't just swim, but they can soar. And so when the foundation is complete irreversible or, you know, irreparable, then we have to also be able to, the same structures that we are tearing down and building up and connecting with each other so that we can recreate something that works for people that look like us, sound like us, deal with real realities, real issues, real trauma, you know, real facing. But you have to also create an alternative. And so, you know, that's why alternative schools were built. So you have to be able to meet their present reality and be able to deal with their future needs. Because if you can't, as you know, the mother says, that they're hungry, if they're struggling, they're not. It's the same principle in the Word of God. You can't go past people and they're standing outside McDonald's and you saying, I'm going to pray for you, and they're hungry. You have to feed them. And so, you know, my classroom, we have to feed them. You have to create those environments where you meet the needs. And so create an alternative as well.
All right. Wow, I hate to rush. Come back. Please come back. Don't go. Don't leave me. Don't. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. All right. 12, give me 30 seconds right quick. 30 seconds to live by.
I respect everybody, all the doctors and Pastor Waller and you and everybody. Love y'all. In case the phone blink out.
Thank you so much.
Love,
we appreciate you.
All right.
Don, give me 30 seconds right quick, big brother. I hate to rush everybody, but our time has got away from
us. Mr. Dodgery, I hate leadership with at our people. You know, I'm listening to my sister talking about kids. Kids are baby goats. And I hate to hear our sisters talk about church, because where we came from, we had temples.
Okay. All right.
I'm listening very closely. And then, Mr. Doctor, you're not listening so closely. You're turning my baby boy into a homosexual. I'm looking at you.
Okay. All right.
What kind of educators do we have?
All right.
You know,
all
it's
right.
sad.
All right.
It's the only thing I'm going to say. It's sad.
All right. I'll be back in touch with you, Don. I'll be back in touch with you. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for joining us. Yeah. Looks like Josh, we got 60 seconds. We'll catch you next go around, okay? But appreciate you joining us tonight.
Okay.
All right. Pastor Waller, we're going to turn it over to you, sir, so you wrap us up for the evening.
All right, we thank everybody who had a chance to speak as well as those who was listening. But the Word of God does say, we then who are strong all to bear the infirmity of the weak and not to please ourselves. In other words, put others first. Watch God do the rest. I yield back to you on that note.
Wow. Time's got away from. We'll be back Thursday night, 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode of Talk Straight. Thank you very much. Powerful comments to all of our guests. Thank you all very, very much for joining us. Hope you come back and join us here on Talk Straight, 7 o'clock p.m. Tuesday, Thursday night. We'll see you then.